Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
This week, Hurricane Katrina disrupted the energy markets, and the grain futures managed, well, they hung tight, even as the cash basis along the river broke. We'll try to find out what the futures might hold. That happens today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Steve Erdman of EFG Group. Our panelists today are Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois, Mike Zuzlo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Let's open today's discussion with this question. Earlier this week, of course, USDA's crop progress report showed a better-than-expected corn and soybean crop in the Midwest. And then later in the week, FC Stone and Informa both released crop production estimates just above the USDA August numbers. This would truly be an unusual event if the numbers from USDA were to grow from August to September. They're due out September the 12th, and what's considered a short crop year, by the way, at least for corn. Do you think the corn crop could actually be getting bigger? Clayton Pope.
Not significantly, I wouldn't think, but I was certainly surprised by the numbers that came out Thursday night and Friday morning. Speaking of corn, I mean, certainly from everybody I talk to, customers and in other contexts out there, just don't really seem to think that their corn crop is growing, or their beans for that matter, with some exceptions there, but kind of a surprise to me.
Clayton Pope, of course, with Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois. And Mike Zuzula, your assessment.
Well, the corn, like Clayton said, that'd be tough. We went back to 1980 and looked at the changes USDA made from August to September. And if memory serves me, it was either 7 or 8 times in that, you know, 25-year time span that they took the yield down, about equal number of time that they took the yield up. So it would be probably, with this type of a growing season we've had, very, very hard. And the average was around 2.3 bushels an acre that they took the number down in the September report if it was a dry year like we've had this year.
Taking a look at what happened, the Chicago Board of Trade for the week, corn futures are finished like this. September contract, 208.75, the high, the low at $2. Settlement price was down 0.25 from last week's settlement at 203.5. December futures were off 0.5 from last Friday's settlement price at 217.25. Wheat futures, the high 315.25, the low at $3.75, and the settlement price at 305, down 7.25 from last week. December futures at 320, they were off 7.5. And the oats finished the September contract at 142.25. They were off 5.75. We'll get back to the corn in just a bit. Want to hit something very quickly with the wheat traders, showing record shorts on the CFTC commitment of traders report, 53 to 54,000 contracts. What does that mean in this marketplace?
Good question. You know, wheat for the producer, it has been the victim of the poor demand in our minds, and the fund selling has been leading the assault on this mindset of poor demand. It seems to us, Todd, that the funds want to be on the lookout for demand, and it makes sense that they would, that they'd buy the good strong demand commodity and sell the weak demand commodity. Why? Because the dollar exchange rate and interest rates and inflation, because all three of those work together for the most part. So if you're seeing a lower dollar and stronger inflation, you would think a commodity would go up in demand at the price levels that you're looking at, especially in wheat futures at $3. So I think that's really important that we've tried to put that into our clients' heads, is that there is some fundamental method to their madness, because they do look at inflation, they do look at exchange rates. Wheat, we think, is a good example of that, and that's why wheat and corn have been hit so hard, but beans have not really been hit as hard, except for the last month or two.
Taking a quick look at numbers that were released late in the week by Refco and FC Stone for corn. Those two companies looking at a 10.445 billion bushel corn crop from Refco, FC Stone at a 10.38 billion crop. Those both just above USDA's 10.35 number. What are you thinking about total crop production at this time? Clayton?
Total crop production?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just kind of tend to concentrate more on a sort of a zero-in basis on the corn versus beans and so forth. I mean, I don't really understand your question. I mean, in terms of like the
what's your
impact
guess
on acreage or
total production? What's your guess
for corn?
Yep.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. For corn, I don't think that in form, I would certainly think it'd be the high end. So I'd say 2.3, 2.4. I mean, 10.3, 10.4. I'd be very surprised to see the final number go above that.
All right. And Mike, have you been working with a different crop production number for corn?
We've been at 138. We're going to release our numbers to Dow Jones next week. We're probably going to drop it a little bit, Todd, but not much, because we're trying to peg what we think USDA will say. And, you know, if we talk to someone on the phone that's a client, we want to stress to them that we think it's like a 1993 type yield, where it's going to come late unless USDA gives us a shock on the 12th. But it's more likely that it'll be like 93 in terms of problems like diplodia, fruit weight, test weights with the tips not filling out, things like that, 14 around instead of 16, 18 around. Those things probably won't come until later, and that was exactly what happened in 1993, where the USDA moved a little bit, but then we found out in the field it was a lot worse. And so we're kind of in that mindset, but we probably won't take our numbers down that much.
With one exception, of course, 1993 being the year of the Great Flood, and this a fairly drought year, at least a big drought year in Illinois and parts of Missouri, and the rest of the Midwest is faring pretty well. In fact, if you look at the numbers, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota did pretty well on the crop progress reports this
week.
No,
that's a real key point. I think that's a real good clarification we need to make at this time. We're thinking price action will be very similar to 1993 because of those fundamental factors. But yeah, it's a world different in terms of agronomics and what we had that year.
Let me make sure I've got this right. So you're thinking there won't be too many big surprises in the 12th, but they will nosedive off as we go through October and November then.
Nosedive meaning we'll move towards the low 130s.
All right. Let's talk a little bit more about what corn farmers might do at this point. LDP is going to be a big, I don't know whether it's going to be a problem for them at this point because of Katrina or not. And tell me how that might all play together. And in previous weeks, we've talked about this and said, well, the lows will probably come early. There may not be an opportunity for corn farmers across much of the Midwest for their new crop, at least, to pick up an LDP. Has that changed?
No. Our mindset would be at initial stage with how messed up the Gulf is, and it'll be interesting to hear what Clayton has to say about this, because I know he's got some good contacts too. But our mindset would be Katrina's going to help get an LDP or hold on to a bigger LDP because you're backing up grain in the United States. And that's where it goes back to the barges and how wide the basis got all the way up the river system. And so our philosophy would be, hey, this may help attach an LDP for a longer period of time.
Basis, by the way, on the Mississippi and Ohio rivers reported to have widened 10 to 15 cents by the end of the week, though we did see a lot of elevator bids go much wider than that, off 30 cents, I think, on Monday in one northern Illinois location. Talked about a break in the Iowa marketplace as well. What are your feelings about basis, Clayton?
Well, yeah, like Mike had said, I think this whole mess down at the Gulf is probably going to make basis suffer, maybe very dramatically. It's just a $1 million question how soon we can get up and running down there, but I just have to think that it's going to be later rather than sooner. And at the very least, I think that we have a problem with so many elevators being so full for this time of year, much fuller than normal. And this is just kind of gives them a great justification to really lowball their basis bids anyway. But besides that, I mean, I just think physically we are looking at a backup, and who knows how long it's going to be. But I think in all likelihood we'll tend to drag out that low LDP time frame.
And one thing we really want to watch for is the export sales in the next couple weeks, because will we see a great big goose egg or net reductions, and how will the market psychologically deal with that? Because we will be shut down everyone's saying, I think, around 30 days before we really open. So we would think those weekly export sales reports could, really pull some psychological punches with the market.
Yeah, and what happens on the world export market in that case for... Well, for corn, it'd be interesting to watch. And for beans, I suppose Brazil will have a second opportunity as we come through. But for corn, there's not much other place to pick up corn. Argentina, South Africa, maybe a little bit. And then, of course, China has a pretty good size crop. They're at a record, I think, 130 million metric tons, which is 5.1 or 5.2 billion bushels. So
right,
what happens here?
It's a great question. You know, if you look at the numbers, you would think that the corn would be well supported on the world market because there's not a, it's out of place. It's all in the United States this year, and it's kind of nice that it's happened this way. We're running about 44% of the world stocks right now in corn. Major exporters are running around 3.5%. Now, beans, it's just the opposite. We're running 10% of the world stocks at this point after the August report. The major exporters, like you talked about, they're running 76% of the world stocks. So if anything's probably going to suffer because of the delays, it's probably going to be they're going to go looking for beans.
I want to follow up on the corn just a bit because we do export so much corn and we have twice as large a crop as any place else. If we back this up coming out of in through harvest, if we're backed up 30 days, is there a way for importers to pick up corn other places? I mean, how could you disconnect the price in Chicago or the price locally with the world price? Can that happen?
Well, for a time, you know, our experience would be that for a time, the price in China at the Dalian exchange, the Brazilian exchange, the Argentine exchange, and then the board becomes a follower, not a leader under that circumstance. Now, going into harvest, the U.S. harvest, you would think that wouldn't be the case. But again, we're in this circumstance with very high energy prices. Farmers are going to seal whatever they can in the bins, in our opinion, because they're not going to let go of lone price corn when they know their break-evens are going straight up due to anhydrous prices. So it's a really, really intriguing and atypical year in many variety of areas.
Follow up on that point of energy and fertilizer cost. What are you telling farmers about ways to protect themselves, if there is any, at this point?
There's really none at this point. If you didn't lock in diesel and LP and natural for irrigators earlier in June, it's really tough. You can't lock in really natural to protect anhydrous anymore because they tend to not really work very well with each other. We heard $565 a ton in central Indiana for fall applied nitrogen, and you know, including the bar and everything. But many people have called in from the client base and said, and maybe Clayton has heard this too, we've been at an issue where you're not getting bids now since Hurricane Katrina.
I've heard that one a couple of times over the Farm Progress Show. I heard that more than once, that they're not willing to bid at all on anhydrous ammonia. I suspect Clayton's probably heard the same thing. Did you happen to see from the U of I this week the numbers that they projected for Illinois farm income on a per acre basis look like this? 2003, these are actual figures. $201. I think this was an average for both corn and soybeans, so $201 per acre. 2004, $217 an acre. This year, and these are for Central Illinois farms, $78 per acre. Yeah, 70 is, and I got these from Gary Schnitke, who's an ag economist at the U of I. And for 2006, taking in the fertilizer and fuel cost, below $150 an acre. Now, in this 2005 season, the additional cost for fuel and fertilizer was $25 an acre. So these numbers were pretty dramatic when you look at them. And that, I suppose that means that cash rents have to go down pretty dramatically, though I don't know that that'll happen. So I'm not sure what the question here is other than this looks pretty bleak. Chris Hurd, I can recall, telling us a year ago that we run on a boom and bust cycle in the farm community, and that he was fearful that a bust cycle might come. Boy, $78 an acre sure looks like a bust cycle, but that was with the drought. I'm not sure where to go with the question but other than
I would just say that
the numbers.
I'd caution listeners to not make the jump from looking at how poor income is to the feeling that prices are going to have to rally to compensate for, you know, the bad situation on the farm, because we've seen all too many times throughout history that the market's just not that kind. Certainly in the long run, if it's a prolonged situation, then eventually supply and demand, I guess, will take effect and would have that desired effect in the long run. But the short run, you know, one way or another, this corn crop is going to get planted again next fall, no matter how much, or next spring, no matter how much inputs have gone through the roof. Just like South America, you keep hearing these stories about their bean plantings are going to be down dramatically because things are so expensive down there and they can't get financing. But I feel the same thing there. Sure, we might see a little dip in acreage, but those acres are going to get used by and large. So in the short run, looking at just marketing this crop that we're looking at right now, the fact is we've still got to carry over 1.9 billion bushels. Now, if what Mike is talking about comes true, that the yield ends up getting adjusted down to the low 130s, well, I'd say all bets are off, and that would be a totally different picture. But if that doesn't happen, and let's face it, this last week, I mean, Informa came out higher than USDA, and FC Stone came out higher than USDA. So if we come in with a yield, you know, somewhere around what USDA said last time, and there's only been two times in the last 16 years that we had a carryover larger than what we're looking at right now, and I don't think there's a real rosy price outlook right now by any means. I think that farmers are holding on to way too much grain. For heaven's sakes, so many of them still have an awful lot from last year.
I suppose they might be remembering 2003 when they let go too early ahead of harvest.
Yeah, but 2003 we had a U.S. carryover less than half of what we have right now. Less than half. I mean, it's all the difference in the world.
All right, let's take a look at the numbers as they came in from the Chicago Board of Trade for the beans. September contract, a high this week of 597.75, a low at 584. Beans settled at 588.5. They were down 2.5 from last week. Noves at 599 were down 3. We haven't touched on this bean market too much. Earlier in the week at Farm Progress Show, we held six different outlook panels on Tuesday. Nobody really was willing to say which direction the beans might go, and I had six analysts on stage with me at the Farm Progress Show. Clayton, you want to take a stab at it?
Well, I got to say the trend is your friend, or it's certainly not the farmer's friend right now, but the trend is kind of undeniably down, it seems to me. We made a new recent low, I believe Thursday, down at 595, lower again Friday. I'm as shocked as anybody or more that these yield estimates are coming out high, and I just have to think that when push comes to shove, these yields will take a downtick. But if they don't, and we've seen time and time again where the USDA somehow or other is proven right in the long run on some of their estimates that don't seem right at the time, if they're right, then I think beans actually have significant downside risks. So right now, I would say the trend on beans is down, and I see it staying that way.
A quick comment on beans from you, and then we need to get to Steve Erdman here pretty shortly.
Yeah, the 200-day moving average is key to us still. We haven't been back up above it on a closing basis since, I think, the 23rd of August. So we go back up above that. We think the trend mindset will change. 100% agreement with Clayton on the beans.
In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Steve Erdman of the EFG Group.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The last week of August was generally a quiet one across the state of Illinois. The only significant rain this week occurred in southern Illinois, first with some thunderstorms last weekend, and then with rain associated with the remnants of Hurricane Katrina. The rain with Katrina spread over much of southeastern Illinois by Tuesday morning, reaching as far north as southern Champaign and Vermilion counties during the afternoon. The heaviest rain was in far southern Illinois, where over 2 inches fell near Metropolis. Amounts decreased as you headed further north and west. August rainfall in Illinois was near to above normal, roughly southwest of the line from Quincy to Charleston. Rainfall was less than 75% of normal in far northeastern Illinois. Much of northwestern Illinois remains locked in extreme drought. Temperatures this week were generally near to below normal across the southern half of the state because of the rain and cloud cover associated with Katrina. Sunshine in the northern half of the state allowed temperatures to reach near to slightly above normal levels. It looks like September will start out rather quietly in Illinois. Temperatures will run near normal with highs in the upper 70s to mid 80s next week and lows generally in the 60s. There may be a chance for a few scattered showers early next week, but it looks like dry weather is going to be the rule across much of the state. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists today on Commodity Week are Mike Zuzlo of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities out of Champaign, Illinois. Joining us now, Steve Erdman of the EFG Group. He joins us for our discussion. He was born, by the way, and raised on a farm in McLean, Illinois, Chenoa to be more exact. His father and a brother are still on that farm. Steve's a University of Illinois alum in Ag Econ and has worked for ADM Investor Services, a grain merchandiser in Peoria. Then he moved on to the Merck and to the Chicago Board of Trade, where he was on the floor. And then he finally formed his own company, EFG Group, in 1991. He manages it and works with REFCO today. Still tells us that the favorite part of his job is giving options seminars to farmers. Okay, Steve, good afternoon to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Todd. Good to be here.
First, give me an option strategy for the soybean market. Most are not willing to call in either direction at this point.
Well, I think what you're going to see is the market develop into a sideways range. We're going to go nowhere fast. You're going to have harvest pressure that's keeping us in the general area that we've been here in the last week of trade. I think the market's going to develop into a trading range, something between near-term 590 on the downside and probably 630 on the upside, and I think it could broaden that out a little bit to extremes of 570 in Nov beans and 650. To me, those types of strategies offer an opportunity if you go in and sell premium, sell straddles and strangles, because I think the market's going to stagnate. So they're risky strategies because you're riding premium, you're assuming risk. You've got to make sure that the people that attempt these strategies are working very closely with their brokers so they don't get themselves in trouble, because if we see any kind of uncertainty in price and the market explodes either way out of those suggested ranges, they'll be assuming a futures position that would have to be margined, and they just have to be careful. But that's probably what I would be doing right now.
It's interesting, Steve, that you enjoy giving the option seminars to farmers. It seems like my experience, and I'm sure you'll agree, is that when people buy options in general, whether it's calls or puts, I mean, the vast majority of time you just sit there, and even if the price goes your direction, it's a race against time, and the market loses in that race, and so the option doesn't usually come through this desired purpose. Do you advocate doing the kind of thing, like if you're going to buy, let's say you bought a November $6 put on the close on Friday for 19.5 or 20 cents, I would think a good strategy to protect the downside would be to do that and then perhaps sell a November 640 or 660 call against it.
Clayton, that's one of my favorite strategies, especially for the livestock and grain markets. It's what we typify as a fence strategy, and it creates a floor price, and it uses the premium in the out-of-the-money calls to help finance your long put position or your floor price. And I think it's a tremendous tool for farmers. I try to introduce that as much as I can and reemphasize that to the producers that we talk to, because it forces you to create an acceptable floor price and at the same time create an acceptable ceiling price. And I think it's critically important for the farmers to protect every penny they can of their margin, because long option strategies are good for some people, but they got to understand exactly what they're getting when they put long option strategies on. To me, I typify it by talking about life insurance, and you don't buy life insurance hoping you die, obviously. It's the same thing when you're doing long option strategies. You got to recognize why you're putting on long put strategies or long call strategies and what you expect the result to be. It's to give you that comfort or to give you that cushion and allow you to participate in a price rally if you buy puts, for example. Or if you buy calls, it allows you to participate if you're an end user for livestock feed, if the market comes in your direction and prices go lower. So, I do love that fence strategy, though, Clayton. It's a real good strategy.
Steve, taking a step back, we should say for disclosure's sake that, Risk Management Commodities puts its orders in through you and the other folks there. We still do it through the phone, and we always joke around about how we're still dinosaurs because we won't do it in the computer, but it brings up a bigger issue and something that we're hit up a lot when we do our meetings out around the Corn Belt. What are the biggest changes in the last, 25 years you've been doing this? Are funds as big as they are? Is computer trading coming more and more? Anything that you want to hit upon that would serve us really well?
Absolutely, Mike. The funds are here to stay. Unfortunately, you see the the economic incentive from the exchanges to push as many contracts through the exchanges as they can, because that's how they make their money. And that can be seen by the success of the IPO that the Merck had, and the fact that the Mercantile stock price traded over $300, and I believe it's broken back somewhat, but now the Mercks had record volume, I believe, on Wednesday and Thursday. So again, the exchanges are going to do everything in their power to attract all the volume that they can, and that means that they're going to, as they have been for the past, at least 10 or 15 years, have been very willing to allow the funds and the managed traders to increase their position limits and to do everything they can to have more contracts on the books. It, to me, from my perspective, it's changed our market. I'm not a big fan of it, but it's the game that we're forced to play at this point. It used to be 30 years ago, I think you had 100 people making 100 different decisions that gave the market a much smoother price flow. And now you've got big orders coming at the market from one or two individuals that tend to make it more volatile and tend to exaggerate moves. It tends to make the moves quicker. So all these things are as a direct result of the funds and their, you know, propensity to move with big numbers. I mean, that's, I don't like it. I think we have to recognize as producers and marketers that at times it's going to give us good prices. At the same time, other times it's going to push things to where we don't believe they should go based on what we see as the fundamentals. But I think we have to do our best to take advantage of those opportunities and include them in our marketing plans.
Steve, I've always been a big believer in the commitment of traders reports and trying to look at that and, you know, track what the funds are doing and so forth. But it seems to me that lately, with the advent of the index funds, them being, you know, establishing such a big presence, in my understanding is they are considered a commercial for purposes of those reports, it renders them almost useless. What would you say about that?
I don't argue with you, Clayton. It's very difficult. I mean, I don't think people can really absorb the size of these index funds. I don't think they can understand what a dramatic impact they can have and they're going to have on our markets. This is something relatively new for these people, and I don't think the index funds traders themselves understand our markets, maybe to the degree that they should, to understand how some of their decisions are going to impact, you know, their own portfolios. But I agree with you. Commitment to traders reports are a valuable tool, but as I said before, I think everything is shifting in how it's reflected in price and how we have to do our analysis of the different tools that we look at to gauge, you know, who the participants are, what degree their positions may affect the market. It's a different ballgame these days.
Steve, very quickly, in 10 or 15 seconds, and this is hard to do, can you tell me what your price projection are for corn and beans?
I think the markets, I agree with what Mike said in terms of the market finding a low. I don't think we're there yet. I think Nova Beans could break down to 570, and then I think we're going to find some major lows the first week of October in corn and soybeans, and we're going to have a very similar rally to 1993 as we rally into the second quarter next year. And I'm very optimistic about prices next year.
Steve, thanks much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Steve Erdman is with EFG Group. He clears through REFCO. And Clayton Pope is with us today from Clayton Pope Commodities, along with Mike Zuzlo of Risk Management Commodities. I'm Todd Gleason. That's this week's Commodity Week.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for crops. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.